Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Sitka Hunting Gear. This week, we're doing something a little off the cuff. I've never had any real experience with this, but I've had a bunch of questions come across on using pack animals. So I was actually introduced to, we have Bo Beatty on the phone with Wilderness Ridge Trail Llamas, and he's pretty much the guy to go to, you know, for pack llamas and stuff. So how you doing today, Rob?
I'm doing really good. Yeah, thanks, John.
Cool. Good. You know, before we roll into this, so let's give everybody a chance to get to know you a little bit, and just kind of give us a little rundown about yourself.
Yeah, so Bo Beatty, again, Wilderness Ridge Trail Llamas. I'll be 30 next month, and grew up in the horse and mule world and as a cattle ranch and outfitting family, and basically learned about llamas quite a few years ago in 2006 when I was in Argentina. And from there, it's just spiraled into where I'm at today. I grew up in the Wellsville mountain range, and so, which they claim is the steepest mountain range from top to bottom in North America. Wow. Hunting chuck and pheasants and deer. So it was quite the place to grow up in, because we actually lived right on the mountain. I grew up literally hunting every day for chuckers, quail, doves, you know, pheasants and mule deer and ducks and geese in the fall. So that's kind of how I got my start into the hunting world. And my great grandfather, I spent a lot of time with him on the ranch, and he was a state and federal trapper. So I grew up trapping a lot as well. And fun. Yeah, just had my first son, Wade Daniel.
Nice. Wade, congrats.
Thanks, man.
That's awesome. And so
excited to pass down the heritage and see how he, what he thinks of it here, and when he gets a little older.
Nice. Hey, you're almost the same age I was when I had my first. That's a fun time.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Good deal. So you mentioned you got introduced to llamas in Argentina. Right. Give us a little background on that.
Yeah, okay. So I was actually serving a LDS mission for 2 years, and when I was over there, I went up towards the Altiplano in Bolivia, where they transport a ton of goods across the river systems up there in between two countries. And when I was up there, I was amazed, you know. I was up there, you know, crossing the border legally, and then just right underneath the bridge, there is all these boats going back and forth, back and forth. And on each side of the country, in Bolivia, on the Bolivia side, and then on the Argentina side, there was these llamas, and they would get all the gear, heaps of gear, and they put them on the llamas, and llamas would take them to all these little tiny remote.
We're losing you. Something happened.
How's that?
Oh, good. We're back to good.
Okay.
So we lost like the last 10 seconds of what you said. Now I lost video.
Hold tight. How about now?
Good. Back to good.
All right. So I'll just re-paraphrase there. But so I go up to Argentina, to the Bolivian-Argentine border, and see all these boats going back and forth between two countries, illegally transporting goods. And then llamas bringing gear to the boats, and then also on the other side, they were taking them out of the boats. And so that's kind of where I very first saw them in action. And, you know, from there, I just beginning to research and learn all about them. And when I got back from Argentina and Bolivia, and then I started getting pretty heavy into it when I got back home into the States.
Cool. So I get a question all the time. It's like people want to know how much a llama can carry in the field. So basically they're trying to gauge if it's worth them even pursuing that. But I would imagine, I mean, it's quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people ask me, they're like, so how much can a llama pack? And I think that, and this is someone that's actually never seen the type of breed that we pack with. And they're used to seeing animals that are maybe 260 to 300 pounds, woolly, you know, on angry, spitty. They've never seen a car or a classic llama, which are much bigger, short wool, and around 400 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And so they're thinking, when they look at that animal, that they're thinking in their mind, they're thinking, yeah, that animal can come back 40, 50, maybe 60 pounds at the most. And they're probably right. And so if we go off a percent of body weight, so we've got 330-pound animals that are packing 25% of their body weight, which is about 80-plus pounds. And then we've got 400-pound guys, the llamas. And I call them guys because most of our packers that we work with are males.
Got it.
You basically – and they're packing, you know, 90-plus pounds. And so once in really good packing shape, the rule of thumb is 70 pounds anytime, anywhere – as many days in a row as they should be able to do that. And that's what ours do for us. But very often they're packing 85 pounds throughout the whole season, which is somewhere between 120 and 130 days a year.
Wow.
So just to give people an idea, but you know, your backyard KSL classifieds, Craigslist llama, you shouldn't expect them to do that. You know, this is an athletic animal bred specifically for thousands of years by the Inca. That's now we seek out these traits and we breed them, and you know, bloodlines are everything. Just like not every bull elk can be a giant bull elk, even though they live all have great feed. The genetics have got to be there. Same thing with llamas. Genetics got to be there to get that superior animal. So,
how does one ease into you know, getting themselves a couple pack animals, or even just one, just to kind of, you know, for their own personal use or whatever? How do you kind of get into that?
So, you know, the thing is, I've seen there's two ways to go about it. And I'd say most people, what they do is they learn about llamas and then they find a friend or an outfitter and then they go and use them and then they're like, set, okay, this is what I'm doing. And then they just go find whatever kind of llama they can find for as cheap as they can find it, and hopefully it works out. I would say 60% of the time it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And that other 40%, only half of that doesn't work out like they wanted it to. They're just kind of limping by.
Got it.
My recommendation is simply to, if you're interested in llamas, contact an outfitter. And there's a few in Colorado. I don't know of any in Montana right now that would allow you to do this. And then myself, and we operate in Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, and Utah. And so, and obviously Idaho. And so I reach out to an outfitter, talk to them, ask them all the questions, and then simply go on an overnight trip with them.
Mm-hmm.
We charge $325 to go on an overnight trip. We provide all the food and all the gear. You simply come and just explore the llama options, see how it's done, learn everything you can about it. And then from there, decide if it's for you or not, and then I would rent some really good pack animals from an outfitter, at least on one occasion. And then from there, you kind of have an idea of the gear, the equipment, the animals, what you're looking for, and then just staying in contact with the few breeders that are in North America and breeding, pack llamas and buy one. So I think it's a series, a process, not something you just wake up one day and jump into. I think it takes a little bit of time to do it right.
So, what can one expect to pay for a llama, and about what does it cost to, and I hate to use the word maintain, but maintain a llama for a year?
Yeah, sure. So when you kind of break it down in, numeric value, you can find llamas online for free. You can find it for $10, $50, a couple $100. And like I said, you're rolling the dice, and there's no way you're going to get the high performance out of those guys. You're looking for a top of the line pack llama, trained, ready to rock and roll. You're looking at 3,000. If you're looking for that same animal but younger, say a yearling or a 2-year-old, you can pick them up for $1,500 to $2,000. But and the best of the best pack llamas, that are can be considered breeding stock, but maybe not quite breeding stock. They're around 4,000. And breeding males and females range from 3,000 to 10,000 right now. But
Jesus.
yeah, I mean they're
I mean, I guess
expensive.
it's just like dogs. I mean, a good hunting dog. So I trained shed dogs for a while. I have my one myself, and really good shed dog. I mean, you could get 20 grand for them. Well, you also have to imagine that's also an income producing dog. Like, it's picking up money for you. So that's probably the reason. But even a good bird dog, okay, let's say, so bird dogs don't necessarily, unless you're an outfitter and you're relying on the dogs to perform for your clients. But even good bird dogs, I mean, you pay eight to 15 grand on a really good birdie dog. So no, I could see that. I mean, a lot of that money comes from the tra it goes into the training. Like you said, the actual animal itself, you could probably pick one up, like you said, for free or whatever, but it's not going to come from that good bloodline, and it's not going to have the proper training, which means a lot more work on your part, to get whatever you can out of that animal. So that makes sense. It's not too, what's the word I'm looking for? Surprising that that they go for that much.
Yeah, so when you think about it, the females are pregnant for 11 and a half months. And so you got to wait that year. And then you really don't start really doing much with them until they're two, in terms of packs and saddles and backcountry experiences. And so then you're 3 years into it at 2 years old, and you've got all the feed and care and just the opportunity costs and training. You can't you If you sell a llama at 4 years old, if I sell one at 4 years old that's ready to go packer at $3,000, I'm making about 400 profit, and that's basically my time. And so I'm really making next to no money when I'm selling these at, I make more money a year than I do the llama.
So what does it cost? I mean, I guess this is all relevant, because obviously if I had one here in my backyard, I'd be having to feed it,
Every day.
every day, as opposed to letting it graze or whatever. But on the average, what does it cost to a year to have per animal?
So you should expect $250 to $300 a year, kind of as like a Western United States care and maintenance. And that's with heavy winters or super long summers, right? And that includes, yeah, that pretty much includes everything. But minus vet expenses, there's always that variable expense that you gotta try to plan for, but you just really don't know. But $250, $300 a year is what we budget for our animals, and we have 130 of them. So, do the accounting on that.
Jeez, that's a lot, man. That's a lot. Oh, jeez. And what's the life expectancy?
So it's kind of a
Or maybe I
no
should
question.
say, what's their working life expectancy? Like, what, obviously, I'm sure they live longer than you run them.
So I kind of got some stories around that, but I mean the base utility. So you just should expect your llamas to be at their peak, optimum, high performance. Just cannot knock them down from 7 until 18. So
Oh,
roughly
wow.
11 years of solid packing experience, and that's commercial experience. However, we do get a lot of miles out of our llamas at 3, 4, 5, and 6 as well. You know, a lot of miles out of them. So they work up to that utility mark. But the reason why I say 7 years old is because a pack llama really doesn't hit its muscle memory mass, VO2, stamina, all that stuff until they're 7. At that time, pretty much got it all built in and they're ready to go.
Nice.
Doesn't mean the
So honestly, I mean, it's a pretty good, it's a long-term investment. I could see now, obviously if the animal only lived, was able to work like 5, 6 years, $4,000, $5,000 kind of be a little bit of a stretch, but geez, that actually doesn't sound too bad.
Right. Which it's very different from purchasing a goat, right? Purchase a goat as a yearling, they start packing up 3 or 4, and then they're done at 11, and they cost $350, and to buy. So it's just a different. But then again, the horse world, my goodness, I mean, how much do you want to spend, right? 20
Oh
grand,
yeah. It's
15,
millions. You could
yeah.
spend millions. You're talking about a, Arabian stallion. I have a friend out here that in Arizona that that raises them and shit. I mean, they get, three quarters of a mil. Crazy, 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 crazy money.
It is crazy.
So sorry, my phone keeps going off over here. Shut it off. So like kind of walk me through. I want to kind of get an idea of like the logistics of hunting with one. Like kind of walk me through getting them to the country, taking care of them while we're in the field, the daily routine. How does it affect, like people think I'm lazy, but or like a prima donna, but a lot of times when I go hunting, 90% of the times I go hunting, I operate out of a motel, which means half the time I got to get up 2 hours even earlier because I'm far away and I got to drive in and then I got to hike in. But I don't like to deal with the whole camping thing while I'm hunting. And like anything that adds more to my plate that takes away from me actually hunting, like I don't know. For me, it's like I don't, it's something I don't like. Like that's like I love going camping. I'll go camping just for the sake of going camping, but I hate camping when I'm hunting. That's why I don't do a whole lot of backcountry hunts. My other reason is because I can't run my business if I don't have cell phone service here and there. Oh, lost you again. There you go. Back. Anyway, so that's why I'm kind of like I'm sure other people too are interested in and the logistics, so to speak, of like using them in the field.
Okay, sure. One of the big reasons I guess I got into llamas is because I wanted to spend simply more time hunting. And just a real quick example, a lot of guys they hunt like a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday they've got to pretty much pack up and go home. And a lot of them don't get that opportunity to use it as a hunting day. And I was like, well, I've got the day off. I'm going to hunt on that day. And so having the animals allows you to simply hunt till dusk till dawn, or dawn till dusk, and hunt all the way through because you can get an animal, elk or deer, out in one trip, end your camp, right? So you know, there's so many things that could go wrong. You could wound the animal, et cetera, et cetera. But essentially, that's one reason why I was really interested in them. And then obviously the ethics behind it, harvesting an animal in September, for example, elk, and the heat, if it's anything beyond 4 miles, it's really tough to do it effectively and get it out in September. So I think two llamas is perfect for one guy. So if one guy were to have two llamas, he could simply build himself a stock rack to go in the back of his pickup truck, and he could put all the gear in the front of the stock rack for him and himself, put the two llamas, jump them in the back. The saddles weigh that I make weigh 6 pounds, and he loads up, 160 pounds worth of gear. Let's say he's going to dry camp, and so he's going to go to the top of a ridge, and he needs to bring water. So he's got one llama carrying water, one llama carrying all of his camp and food, and hikes in there. He's going to average about 2.5 miles to the hour on his hike in, and he loads them up. It takes about 35 seconds, all said and done, to saddle the llamas, and about 30 seconds to put the panniers on. So within a minute and a half, your llamas are saddled and panniers are on. So in terms of that, it's very quick. It's easy. It's nothing like saddling a horse or a mule. So you're on the trail, 2.5 miles an hour. You get to camp, you set up, and you take off the panniers, 30 seconds. Take off their saddles, 8 seconds. And I timed this just recently. That's why I got it in my head so quick. Because people ask me that, it's like I don't really know. So timed it. That's how long it takes. And then you put a stake in the ground where you kind of selected your campsite. Give your llamas a chance to drink water, and start glassing. And start hunting. Go if you find an animal that night, great. Go check it out, investigate it, hunt it. Come back to camp, check on your llamas. Should be fine. Go to bed, wake up, give them a chance to drink some water. Maybe restake them out, and so they've got a little more feed to eat around the camp. And go hunt for the day, and come back at night. And that's kind of the series of it. You can take them with you. Say you spotted an animal, and you're pretty confident that it's going to come together. You simply take them with you that day, and they're really silent. And so, as far as spooking game, it's never been a concern for me. So you can take the animals back in with you, harvest the animal, and simply, I have these 4 gallon square buckets. Say you kill a deer, you can actually, as you quarter the animal out, you can just stick the buckets from the animal, the quarters right into the buckets. The buckets in the panniers, and your meat never touches the ground.
Oh, nice.
Super slick and easy. And it's just simply one llama will carry out an entire deer. So back quarter, front quarter, all on one side of the llama on the pannier, and then you take the neck meat all the way back to the hip bone with the back strap, tenderloin, and then rib and brisket meat all on one side, and do the same thing the other side. Throw it in those two buckets on the left side of the llama, and then the other side of the deer on the other side of the llama, and 90 pounds worth of meat, you're set, and away you go on one llama.
Nice.
People always ask, do llamas have, they scared of game? And all animals are know what's going on, so they know there's a dead animal there. But in terms of like blowing up and freaking out, I've never had that happen before in 9 years of hunting with them. So
It probably goes back to, to training too. If it's a well-trained animal, it's
sure.
gonna be used to it. Do you ever have problems with like bear or wolf or anything or coyotes messing with the llamas?
I've had a couple instances where wolves have come into camp and checked out the llamas, but the llamas spotted them right off the bat, and they did an alarm call. And the alarm call probably didn't spook off the wolves. They just knew they were in over their heads and left. But I've had bears come in through camp kind of coincidentally, and the llamas do that alarm call. I actually have a video of it on our web page. And so bear comes into camp, all llamas do alarm call, and the bear scampers off. Those are a couple
That's
instances.
cool. Are you typically, how many are you taking? I mean, I guess it all depends how many people you're hunting with, but how many do you typically take with you if you're just going you? Just the two or?
I mean, two is ideal. If I'm going to stay in there for a really long time, and I'm 8+ miles, and I'm elk hunting, and in September I'll take three, maybe four. But
Gotcha.
yeah, two is ideal. I told my wife if we never got married, I'd be in BC right now with two llamas, and who knows where.
Nice. So, give me tell me a story. I want to hear a good hunting story involved with the llamas.
All right, I got one. Hopefully, it's not too long.
That's all right.
We went into the Frank Church Wilderness elk hunting or deer hunting a couple years ago, and I think I had just graduated college and was dirt poor, and I think I had $400 to my name, which is enough to buy food, fuel up to our hunting spot, and fuel back, and that was it. So no margin for error. And it was my friend and Justin and I, and it was 17 miles to get to where we wanted to hunt, and we had to cross through an entire different unit. But it took us 2 days to get there, and it's November, it's cold. So we get there the day of the opener, but it was dark by the time we got to camp. So we woke up, second day, season's open, and we've got 1 foot of snow, and the deer are starting to pile down off of this top of this mountain range. And my buddy, he goes to one side of the mountain, I go to the other, and I start hearing shots. and I'm thinking, what is he doing over there? And
Yeah.
he runs back over to me. He's like, I'm out of bullets and my gun's off. I'm like, oh, great. I was like, well, hunt with me for a while. And we found this really crazy buck. He's a 7x8, had bladed out, really cool, dark horned,
Wow.
he'd been in the burn, and it was just a really cool deer. And so we stuck down in on him, and I took one of my llamas down and I shot him and put him all into the llama, staked the llama up on top of the ridge after we'd harvested him. And my buddy took my gun. We saw a deer down on the other side. It was actually a 31 inch wide mule deer,
Oof.
a 4-point, 4x4 with no eye guards. And he shoots that one at 125 yards. We grabbed another llama, went down, put the deer onto the llama, and then it starts to snow. And I checked the weather radio, and we're supposed to get 2 feet at 9,000
Oof.
feet. We started climbing out, but by the time we got down, we already had a foot and a half of snow additional to the foot. And so our llamas, we've got 6 miles to go. And we did
Wow.
7 miles through the night and never stopped. And it was getting deep and bad. And so the llamas are coming downhill in the Frank Church, and we're jumping in the snow, jumping in the snow. So we got 6 2 miles to the trailhead, and Justin and I just had given up, and we'd had enough. And so we decided to camp out that night. We camp out that night, wake up, and when we woke up, you could barely see the tops of the llama's head because of how much snow there was.
Oh my God.
And they were just cushed down on the ground. Anyway, we had to kind of pave the way and move all the snow for 6 miles to be able to get the animals out of there and ourselves. It was pretty crazy. And I had one animal. He was really young, and I learned a lot on this thing. I shouldn't have brought him in there. And he didn't give up, but I thought if we packed any more weight on him, he was just going to go down. And so I ended up putting 120 and 130 pounds on 2 of my llamas and split his load. So he was empty, and they were carrying 120, 130. And that's when I really realized what genetics means and how amazing these guys are. So that was the craziest trip I've ever been on with llamas, and I thought I was going to die at one point.
Oh, jeez. You got
Big
two
buck.
awesome trophies out of it, though, huh?
Yeah.
And a great story.
Great story. Yep. And
Sure.
yeah. And I was broke, and it was just a crazy time in my life, and it's just a fun story. So.
Nice. Nice. Well, I gotta. You say you operate in Utah?
Yeah, in Utah.
Okay, because I got a elk hunt here in the Manti, Central Mountains Manti.
Oh, dude.
I'll be there in August, and I was actually kind of started poking around, looking at, packing guys and stuff like that, because I mean, there's a lot of roads, so it all depends on where I find them. So,
Right.
but I just want to have it that in the back of, the back of my head. 'Cause I remember last year I shot a buck, and I mean, we really weren't far from the road where we had parked. We were probably only like 3.5 miles maybe,
Okay.
but it was raining and it was slicker than snot. And it was so steep. It was just so steep where I had killed this buck that I had shot him. I shot him like an hour and a half or about a little over an hour before dark. Found him right away. Automatically began breaking him down. We
Sure.
didn't get back to the truck until like 11 something, 11:30 that night. And it just shouldn't have taken that long. And it was just kind of like, and it was only a deer, and it was, I had another guy helping me pack out too. So it wasn't just me. If it was me, I think I would have slept out there. It was so I was like in the back of my mind, I'm like, if I shoot an elk and I get into a situation where it was with these super steep, deep canyons, I might want to look into getting a, pack horse or, pack llama or something to help get that animal out, because it is August. Although we will be at like 10,000 feet, and it's, I mean, last year I was every morning was in the 30s, and actually I had a few mornings it was in the 20s, and it really didn't get up much over 65.
Wow.
So, but You never know. I mean, that was last year. Who knows what this year will be like? Who knows? I might be hunting in 90-degree weather. I don't know, but it's just one of those things. Like, you got to have that in the back of your mind. I don't want to go there and spoil a whole elk because I wasn't prepared. Do
Right.
you guys operate around there or no?
Yeah, so we operate two locations, Brigham City, Utah, and then Torrey, Utah. So we kind of
Okay.
split each end of the state, north and south. So we're starting to get more and more requests in Utah, and I kind of have done it organically, and as we have animals to grow down there, but it's definitely taken off, and I think a little bit of marketing, it'll go crazy. Utah's quite the market, but yeah. So definitely something to think about when you're going to Utah in August hunting elk. Man, just
Right.
the heat can kill it, you know?
Yeah. So do you guys just do pack outs, or do you, or does it have to be a whole, pack in the camp, stay the whole time of the hunt type thing, or is it, do you take just pack outs?
So that's a good question. There's three different options depending upon where you're at, but you can always simply rent them. Say you call me up and say, "Hey, Bo, I shot this bull and I'll meet you at this place." And so we can meet on pretty much any private land location, gas station, whatever, and let you take the llamas in your truck and trailer and then go pack them out and just bring them back.
Right.
Or you can come pick them up at the ranch. That's not a problem. In certain areas, or depending on where you're at, we can do the full pack out for you.
Okay.
We just got to know kind of where you're at, what rules and regulations apply, and what we're allowed to do and what we can't do. So,
Got it. So, how do the listeners find out about you?
our website, wildernessridgetraillamas.com, our Instagram page for sure, and then most people end up with the llama rentals or buying just emailing or calling me. So you can call me at 208. 270-7749 to shoot me a text or whatever. And yeah, that's the best way to reach out to us.
Cool. Well, man, that's all I got for you. I want to thank you for coming on. It was definitely an interesting topic. It's not something that we've ever talked about on the show before. And I honestly haven't looked into it all that much myself. I did a little bit. I had a buddy of mine back east that was actually telling me about a hunt that he went on, and they were using goats. Actually, they almost look like ibex. I don't even know what they're kind of a weird breed. I didn't ask him what he showed me pictures, but they pretty much got the same type of horn as an ibex, but they're some type of mountain goat
Oh, cool.
that some guy was using out west. I want to say it was in New Mexico. I think it was in
Yeah,
New
that sounds about
Mexico. So, but yeah, and I'd say that's the only time I ever really gave it any thought, but no, this is cool, man. It's nice to have something in the back of your head. Like, I got some other hunts. Hopefully, in the near future, I'll draw another sheep tag or a mountain goat tag, and those are definitely stuff that you need to pack in for, and it'd be cool to do it, with a string of pack animals,
Oh
instead
yeah,
of. So,
I hear you. The big pack-ins are fun, and there's so many. You've obviously been very successful, doing the truck slash.
yeah, I'm a front country hunter, but
Front country is very successful, and for people looking to do a big backcountry hunt and not own the animals, but for whatever reason, whether it's the meat's going to spoil, or they're going to go a long ways, or bring in a lot of people, or they're having this experience with the multi-generational grandfather, father, son type thing. The animals are a good fit. And I re really highly recommend the rental option to a lot of people, that are doing something like that, because you get the benefit and you don't have to take any of the risk in owning the animals, taking care for them. And once people see them in action, they sell themselves, And people ask me, like some guy calls and asks me, 30 different phone calls and emails. I just finally say, just come on a trip and see what up. And that's really what people need to do, is if they're really interested in it, is just go see them in action, and that'll answer a lot of their questions. We're going to a lot of different Cabela's in August to some of the different fall shows that they have going on to kind of introduce people and do some seminars. So look for us. We'll be doing AM in Idaho August 12th. That's one for people to take a look at. So.
Cool. That's awesome. So real quick before I we get off here, the trips, do you guys kind of do like all off season, like maybe spring, summer, whatever, do kind of like, like a camp and backpack deals, like, for the family or whatever, or anything like that?
Yep, absolutely. We actually, that's kind of the base of our operation. We have guiding operations in Yellowstone National Park where we take people into Heart Lake, some of the greater fishing areas, the thoroughfare, and simply to go backpacking, see the wildflowers, the peaks, and rivers and streams. And we do a lot of fishing expeditions and family tours all through the summer from Yellowstone and then out of Jackson Hole in the Tetons and the Jedediah Smith Wilderness and then out of Capitol Reef National Park in Utah. And at Dixie National Forest and Fish Lake National Forest in Utah, and then right here around in Idaho and the Wind River Range in Wyoming. So the summer backpacking is we get a lot of non-continental US people coming to do those trips, but still a lot of people like the hunters bring their family and go, on
Yeah, I'd
wilderness
like to
trips.
do that. My girls love to go camping. I think they would get a kick out of it. My son's too young still, but to do something like that. But yeah, I don't know if I could get my wife to do it, but I could definitely get my girls to go do it. I'd like to do something like that with them. That'd be fun. So, all right, man. Well, cool. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I'll definitely stay in contact with you. Maybe be calling you up with a big bullet pack down in Utah.
Right. Good luck, man.
All right. Thanks a lot.